successful individuals with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Tampa Bay Downs, Hour 2. On this Thursday, a little bit of our, considering how much racing we got to cover tomorrow, today ends up being a little bit of the Super Bowl show, and with Jake Delhomme just joining us, and later, David Hill, with his, not his final appearance, but it's certainly his final pre-game visit of the year. It's been so much fun having Dave. Rich Ang, I'm sure, is going to have opinions as well. And we go to almost to South Philly. We go to South Jersey. So Tony Black, who joins us now. Good morning, Tony.
Hey, good morning, Stephen. You know who I'm rooting for. Yeah. Being in South Jersey, you can't help but to love them Eagles. And what is it, two and a half? Is that what it is, 2.5?
It seems like it's settled a little bit to 1.5 right now.
That's right, 1.5.
Yes.
Yeah.
It did get to 2.5, and then it sort of settled back a little bit. And frankly, the line movement has been a big part of this story, and we'll have sort of part two of that conversation we had with Dave last Thursday. But, the town and the region, you know, it is the most passionate and crazed football town and sports town, frankly, in the country. There's no place like it.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, my oldest boys were raised in South Jersey, and now one of them lives in Malvern and the other one lives in Florida. He's flying up Friday, tomorrow, and he said, already made arrangements. He says, you know, when they won the Super Bowl last time, Tony and I went to the parade in Philly. And he says, and you know what? He says, when they win the Super Bowl this time, I'm going to take my son, Michael, said, I'm going to take Petey to the parade because he can't miss this the same way I didn't miss it when I was a kid living in South Jersey. So he's flying up with all the plans of staying for the Super Bowl parade.
I love it.
The winning parade. He's got them winners. And the other day he told me, he says, you know, when they played Kansas City says anybody that doesn't bet on this game doesn't like money when you don't bet on the Eagles. And I guess it was 2.5. That's what it was, 2.5 the other day when they played. Now it's 1.5. But he says he's already got them winning. I says, man, I'm so proud of your dedication and you're sincerely an Eagles fan. So you gotta love it.
Wow,
living in South Jersey, you gotta love it.
Yeah, I mean it killed me. I wanted to go to the parade, and if the parade had been. It was later in the week, 5 years ago, and I think yesterday was the anniversary, and I had to fly to Vegas for the NHC, and so I couldn't go down, the way things unfold, I'm heading to New Orleans on Tuesday afternoon, but 14 years season ticket holder in the vet, and we drive from Montreal 7.5 hours to games. And I keep telling everybody, Tony, that it's not. I don't have nearly the anxiety and the spilkes, as we say in Yiddish, over this game that I did 5 years ago was different because waited so long. I mean, just as fans of the franchise. To me, it's just it's great that they're playing in the final game of the year, and it should be entertaining. It should be terrific. So
five years ago, we waited all those years. What was it, 25, 27, whatever it was before they even.
Just going back, to the other two Super Bowls, but I was born in 1959. I had never seen them. Other than two NFC championships, three NFC
right.
championships, I'd never seen them win anything. Significant. So there were just years of misery.
Right.
So. It was unbelievable 5 years ago, and now it's just nice. It's just nice to have a polished franchise and an owner of who's right on all the right issues. And there's a lot to like.
Yeah, a lot to like. You know what? There was a show on TV and a Channel 6. It was a segment about the history of the Philadelphia Eagles. And the one guy that came on and talked was his name was Tom Modorno. And I thought, Tom Modorno? My doctor's name is Modorno. That's going to do the stem cell. And by some coincidence, his father's name was Tom, but this wasn't his father. His father, I think, has passed. But he was talking about when the I think it was the Upton fam guy named Upton, last name, borrowed money off of his Hollywood successful actress wife to buy the Yellow Jackets. That's what they were called in
1933.
33. He bought them for $2,000 and borrowed the money off of his wife, who was a successful movie star. And as soon as he got them, he changed their name from the Yellow Jackets to the Eagles. And I guess his last name was Upton. I forget all the details, but it caught my attention because when I said Tom Moderno's telling this story and my doctor that's going to do these stem cell injections. His name's Moderno. Not a common name. It's not a name like Smith. It just caught my eye. So when I talked to my doctor the other day, I said, Tom Moderno gave a history on the Eagles. He said, that was my father's name, Tom. I said, well, maybe you got a relative that's named Tom. He says, well, I don't know him if he is.
Well, I think I know the connection that you're making. It was Bert Bell who bought them, who founded them essentially in 33 to get them, who is really the with George Halas, the father of the NFL. But I think you mean Upton Bell is the Upton Bell.
I don't listen good unless it's you that I'm listening to on the radio. That was Channel 6. That don't count. But Upton Bell. But the name was originally the Yellow Jackets, they said.
They were in Frankfurt. They were
Frankfurt Yellow Jackets.
Frankfurt Yellow Jackets, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But Yellow Jackets. Who would name a team of Yellow Jackets? But I guess who knows. But anyway, he changed it to the Eagles, Philadelphia Eagles. I'm glad he changed it because I don't like the name Yellow Jackets.
Well, Tony, let me slip in one. We know who you and I are both rooting for, but let me slip in one racing topic. And just sort of touched on a performance from Saturday in the Holy Bull. And, you know, Dale Roman's had Cyclone Mischief coming in as the favorite and had a big effort in the allowance win to sort of establish himself. And I made the point that it seemed to me watching live, and I did talk to Tammy about it afterward, it did seem like he was wrangled back. He broke sharp, and he could have attended the pace more aggressively, and instead ends up being, you know, kind of pulled back to sit, you know, fourth or so on the outside. And I actually not just on the outside. He actually had to tap on the brakes quite a bit and sort of rate along. And
right.
You know, you and I have discussed this before about how you have to judiciously decide how much restraint you're using with with a horse, and explain the decision making process about going on with it. You know, because they weren't going all that fast up front, and it is a racetrack that does play kindly to the front end, Gulfstream.
Right.
So I just, that was my thought.
Yeah, you know what? I totally agree with you. But, you know, when a horse wins and then someone does that, they say, oh, look, he really rode him according to the way the race was setting up. And, well, the race wasn't really setting up to wrangle one back like that because the pace, I don't believe, if I remember correctly, I mean, I'm not taking all the notes, the pace wasn't extremely fast.
No.
So wrangling one back is just strictly a predetermined idea, strategy, that is determined prior to the running of the race. And in so many occasions, you predetermine your strategy, all you do is ride a bad race because you don't ride the horse according to the sensation and what you feel is going on at that particular time. And in so many times, now when the horse wins, it negates everything I'm saying.
Right.
But when you wrangle them back like that, so many times I think of it as you're taking something, maybe that horse's best way of running away from him. You know, unless he's just a runoff horse that empties out after 3/8 of a mile and then staggers the last 3/8 or the last part of the race. But wrangling him back, it's like dynamic tension, you know. You're fighting him. He's fighting you. He's not gaining a forward position. He's not relaxing. You're creating more anxiety with that horse. You're actually taking so much of his run away from him instead of reserving him. Now, some people view that and say, yeah, but he's reserving him. Not when you're fighting him that much. But every once in a while, you'll fight one, and I've had the occasion where it's happened, and I've won the race, where I fought them to that degree. And eventually, after they went a little bit, maybe they spit the bit and relaxed. If they didn't, and you just had to keep doing that, you're really causing a lot of anxiety for that horse, and you're actually taking him back. And the one thing I always thought to do was not put him to the outside of the 3 or 4 or 5 horses that are in front of him. Put him behind those horses so the dirt's hitting him and he'll finally quit pulling on you and he might relax. Then when he relaxes and the race is going on to where you're getting to the point where now you have to improve your position, then you maybe head him out, stop the dirt from hitting him, and he might take off because he didn't pull your guts out all the way down the backside or around the turn. You know, he eventually, when he got hit with the dirt, he stopped pulling on you, and he actually got him to relax. But when you know, every once in a while it'll work well. Yeah, he's still fighting me while I'm in behind them horses, and he's on their heels, and I can't let him go forward, and he's still fighting me. But when I head him out, he should take off. Yeah, that happens every once in a while. But more so than enough, it just takes his run away from him. And he doesn't take off when you head him out into the clear because he's empty. Because you actually fought him into submission. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, it works. But it doesn't work more than it does work. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, this is the game within the game, and certain horses, in addition to, you know, wasted energy, there's also the potential for horses to sulk. And
you know what else? When you tuck a horse in, you know, the head in, when you're pulling on them like that, you're bowing their neck. And there's actually the tendency, what they call a horse to displace. You've caused so much pressure in the esophagus and the whatever, the I don't know all the veterinary terms, but you've pulled their head in and you've actually caused them to have eventually what is called a displace where they displace and it affects their breathing to the point where they don't breathe. They actually roar for their air.
Yep.
when they're in the middle of that. And once you do that, you fought them into submission because they weren't getting their air. You caused them to displace and you put so much tension against their neck and where they get their air passage, you know, through that you've caused them to displace. They're not breathing. And you know what? When you don't breathe, it's like a faulty carburetor on an old 49 Ford. If the gas doesn't get the air, there's no combustion. Well, if they don't get the air, when you turn them loose, there ain't no combustion.
Exactly. All right. Well, Tony, I wanted to get that in because it came up, and I said I got to ask Tony about this because you know it as well as anybody. But, you know, you weren't one to wrangle a horse back if they broke sharp.
I like them just to run into my hands, and hopefully they had a forward position. If they weren't in front, we got them in a position behind horses, maybe, but we always left ourselves a chance, hopefully, to when we did drop their, well, we weren't wrangling them, but when we did get a clear shot, it was to the outside, and hopefully they'd run and take off, you know. But I always felt like running into your hands, and I learned this. You know who I learned it from? It wasn't always the people that taught me how to ride. It was watching a lot of the female riders. They had a way of those light, gentle hands. And those light, gentle hands got a lot of run out of horses because they weren't sitting there like some jock, male jock saying, I'll teach this son bitch. I'll get him back. I'll show him what. They would sit there and they would show patience and a light, gentler touch. You know that light, gentler touch? It works on a lot of these old thoroughbreds. And I learned it from watching a lot of the girls ride when they first started.
I like that. I like it. You've explained, we've discussed that. Tony, I appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. Go Birds.
Go Birds.
Thank
Should
you,
I bet on them, Steve? Should I bet on the Birds?
I think you can. That line is the kind of line that is, you know, pretty much a pick 'em. On an outright basis, why not? And the over-under is 50.5, I think, last I looked.
Yeah.
So they're expecting a somewhat high-scoring affair.
I'm rooting for you and the Birds.
I appreciate
it. You and the Birds.
Quietly confident.
All right. You take care, and thanks for all you do, Steve. Love you, brother. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Tony. Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody, and a great opportunity to get, you know, kind of a snap read on that topic about rating. Because I don't know. I felt bad for Dale and Dennis Alba. So hopefully they can right the ship and get Cyclone Mischief back in the right direction. It's nice to get back in the right direction with Sean Clancy, who joins us now, has a respite in the absolutely frenetic lifestyle that he leads. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to hear your voice. Yeah, it's been far too long.
Well, it is February, but people do. I've gotten emails. You have to report on the Christmas tree from the past year, because you it almost feels like you did this on purpose, that you held us off through Christmas and New Year's, and we have no idea the fate of last year's tree or of this year's new tree.
Well, I have to admit a slight defeat that we this year we actually I had to go to the neighbor's Christmas tree farm and cut one down. So we renovated our house. We had brand new floors, and it was decided that I didn't need to bring in the live tree with the 400-pound root ball on the bottom. And I certainly couldn't ask my sister-in-law once again to pick it up and drop it out of the back of her pickup truck. So we went more traditional than your artificial tree. So I feel good about that. But it was kind of in between, your artificial and my usual, good for the environment live tree. But I got some good trees in the backyard. I'll take a few pictures of them and show them off to you.
Well, I can understand that. And, protecting the new floor counts for a lot. All right. Well, let's get an update then also on your broken foot, broken leg. What'd you do?
Oh, I just tore a ligament in my foot. It's sadly just, I think, old wear and tear. It's I've actually just started making up stories that, I crashed my motorcycle or, things like that, just to make it sound more interesting than, old age and, wear and tear on a 52-year-old body, unfortunately. But hopefully I'm coming back. I did a PRP treatment like they do for horses. And,
wow.
I did the steroids. I did the cortisone shot last year, and you understand why it is a problem for horses, because I felt absolutely great for 30 days. I mean, I was like awesome. And then the 31st day, it was as bad as it was the first day. So that short-term cortisone didn't really work. So I went long-term PRP this time. Hopefully that'll have me back in action. Well, I got to keep up with Tom Law and, marathon, my marathon running brother. I got to get back to work, try to catch up to him.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're riding on the same path that Gary Stevens was when he came back to win the Oxbow in the Preakness.
Yeah, I'm afraid my comeback won't be nearly as dramatic as Gary Stevens winning the Preakness on Oxbow. I'm really just I'm trying to walk without a limp. That's really what I'm going for.
Well, you're also tearing up the hinterlands looking for horse flesh. I mean, every time I look up, you're either at a sale. Richard Kent told me you bought one, a nice one from him at OBS, and you've been highlighting some of the River D horses. Give everybody a River D update.
It's a good time. This time of year to regroup. You basically, our season goes March to November, so you have a little time to kind of catch your breath and regroup and reload. So got a couple new ones coming along, which I'm excited about, a couple new maidens and a couple of nice novices from last year, so I'm excited to get them back on POTUS and Awaken and Cool Jet, who all broke their maiden in the fall. And then I have some new ones. King Tsunami's new. World Factor's new. Rocket One's new. A couple others. So it's good. I'm excited to get going. February is a short month, but it's a long month for us because you're just getting tired of winter and you're thinking about spring, and spring's still a ways away, but you're anxious, you're getting excited to get back going. So hopefully we'll have a good year. It looks like condition book came out. So, I'm the quintessential owner, mapping out the plans with the condition book, and, the trainers are ducking my calls, but that's all right.
Well, and we should really direct people to RiverDStable.com, right? I mean, you've got there's so much going on, and God forbid you advertise anything or try to you're not a self promoter like some people. So, give everybody an idea, Sean, about what else you're offering in terms of your bloodstock service and all the things you do.
Well, I mean, yeah, basically River D just started. It was kind of an organic process, really. I was selling a lot of horses to steeplechase owners, you know, going back. Well, it actually all goes all the way back to Jack Fisher. I was riding first call for him, and when I retired, he just begged me to find him horses, and really wasn't what I wanted to do. I was writing and enjoying that part, and he just kept kind of hammering on me to find him horses. So I started selling him a few horses, and then it's kind of just organically grown from that, which, you know, it's really bought a couple. I was trying to sell horses to other clients that didn't want them, so I decided to buy them myself, and that's gone from, you know, 5 years ago, I really only had a few horses, and now we have 20, I think 2021 for this year. And that's flat and jump. I mean, jump's really the easiest thing for me because it's a lot of my clients and it's a lot of what I've done, but certainly can do flat horses and, you know, bought some nice yearlings over the years and, constantly looking and trying to find the, you know, good horses like everybody else.
And what about the sport side, sport horse?
Sorry, the what?
Sport horses.
The sport horses?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we do that. I mean, we try to do eventing and, you know, showing and fox hunting and, you know, a lot of our River D is very, you know, like most owners, you're trying to find horses to do other things. So, you know, we're constantly getting horses that, you know, are a little older or maybe haven't been as good as we'd like or a little slower than others. So try to retrain them and make them event horses and show horses, fox hunters. So that's fun. I mean, I really enjoy that. I like to make sure the horses are doing something else. So, you know, you kind of keep track of them. And there's a lot of River D horses that are out and about, you know, doing other things, which is fun. There's a horse like Prime Prospectors. I think he's the last productive son of Seeking the Gold. He's still going with Todd and Blair Wyatt's son, James. And it's fun to see a horse that competed for us. He ran on the flat for Mike Stidham and then over hurdles for River D. And then a guy named Peter J, he bought him off of us. And he went point to pointing, and now he's doing hunter chases and fox hunting. And it's fun to see those horses do that. Another one, Peter Meyer, ran for Todd Pletcher, ran a little bit for River D. And James Wyatt's riding him now. He's shown him some, did the Real Riders Cup with him. So that's fun. And my wife, Annie, does a great job kind of retraining these horses and trying to find them something else to do. So that's a big part of what we do for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to give you that, you know, opportunity, riverdstable.com, and anybody that on any area doesn't have to be limited by any means to the chase side, flat winners and you name it, obviously. Sean can help you with it. You mentioned the writing, and one of the reasons I wanted to get you on today, there are a couple different reasons, just to catch up, but also the piece you wrote about Pat Kelly that got the attention that it certainly deserves with Pat's retirement. And Andy and I touched on it Tuesday. I mean, obviously one of the first families on the American racetrack scene, and you know, all the kids, multi-generations, and just an amazing, amazing family. And not having a Kelly barn in New York will leave a gaping hole.
Yeah, for sure. He was a real original, you know, a guy that he's just a lifer, you know, who grew up with his family and doing it. Tommy Kelly, obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, and Pat grew up with him. And I was laughing reading the story. I mean, his dad basically kicked him out of the barn to go start on his own because he had three brothers coming along and needed jobs. So that did so much, so many great things for our sport, you know, just taking care of people. And he's on every board there ever was. And, you know, the retirement program for the horses and the NIVA, and just, you know, giving back. And I think that's so important. And, Yeah, it was just, he's a guy that, you know, you could just count on, and you see him in Saratoga. I wrote the column, you know, he'd be on his bicycle picking up cans, and they'd recycle the cans and buy carrots for the horses. I thought, man, that is so Kelly family, right? That's how they look at things. And I remember his dad being up there. I mean, I stopped by his barn one day, and his dad was cutting carrots for the horses. And Pat Kelly laughed. He's like, yeah, I got a Hall of Fame carrot cutter in my barn. And there was, you know, Tommy Kelly cutting the carrots. And, hopefully he'll stick around or come around and be, you know, enjoy the sport. We'll still see him. I mean, I think it's, but yeah, you kind of lose those original characters. And, you know, we talked about it before. And I'm not that old. I don't feel that old. But when I first started going to Saratoga, you know, 88, 89, there were guys, I mean, the whole backstretch was filled with guys like Pat Kelly, who had, you know, 8, 10, 12 horses, and it was just such a more interesting place. It was such a more competitive place, the sport, I think the sport was sounder back then when you had those, you know, lots of different people with lots of different horses, and it was just guys with 4 horses and 8 horses and 12 horses, and they're, you know, it was really important. I thought that was, you know, just for the originality of the sport and the competitive balance, we've really lost that, unfortunately. But yeah, a guy like Pat Kelly will be sorely missed as a trainer, and like I said, I hopefully he sticks around. He's, you know, going to be still involved somehow. Hopefully we'll see him at Saratoga, and, you know, I'd like to thank him for everything he's done for the sport.
Really nice. And in addition to bringing back that column from the cup of coffee from a few years ago at Saratoga, you also added at thisishorseracing.com. I'll put the link out to it so everybody can read it. And we'll have Pat at the first convenience. He's down in Florida, actually, right now. I heard from him Tuesday, and just, you know, had so many fun conversations with him, and a lot of Belmont weeks. He'd always come over early in the week and sit down. I'm sure he'll still do that, but you know, that barn, the barn tucked in the back there on the backside at Saratoga, you know, under the big trees, and was able to go to quite a few of those Kelly barn barbecues, which were so special. I mean, if you spent the whole afternoon and into the evening, I mean, virtually everybody on the racetrack would stop by at some point.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, that's exactly right. Just the camaraderie of those types of barns. When I'm reading that column again, I see he was, you know, talking about playing football with the Jerkins team, and, you know, all the camaraderie at the backstretch, and that was really important to the Kelly family, really important to racing that we had that. And, you know, sadly, that part just seems like it's waning a bit in our game, and I do think you have to really appreciate it and respect it for sure.
Well, as we turn for home on this visit with Sean Clancy, you know, I explained back when we started the Saratoga special, This Is Horse Racing visits with Joe and Sean and with Tom Law. Almost called him Tom Clancy.
Tom Clancy, that'd be great. I wish he was.
Yeah. Right? That's
he's like a brother. Believe me, he's like a brother.
And he's like Tom Clancy. He's an award-winning author.
Prolific.
Prolific, exactly. And a good sport, too. But, you know, I ostensibly, you know, these visits were to have, you know, turf writers and people that, you know, really have great appreciation for the game to join us in the Thursday 10:30 slot. But really, it was so that 2/3 of the time I could have fellow Eagle fans joining us with Sean and Joe just as sick as I am. And it was one of the great smiles I get is knowing at this time of year, with 3 days away, that Miles and Sean and Joe and everybody, they're all getting ready for the Yigs, and it should be fun Sunday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it for sure. It's very exciting. They're in it again. I have to laugh. I mean, really one of the first sporting events that Miles and I enjoyed when he was old enough to kind of really get it was when the Eagles took on the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And I remember laughing after it. I'm like, Miles just thinks this is just like every year, like, you know, just this is just like what happens as an Eagle fan, you know. It's like, He just watched the game, and sure, I'm explaining to him why we're Eagles fans and what it's like, and then, you know, taking on the Patriots, and I said, Miles, I have this line with him. I said, you got to step on their neck, and we don't ever let anybody up off the floor in sports, and we always go back to that game when the Eagles, you know, it's like. I was so proud of them in that game because they just kept playing, aggressively and offensively because you knew the Patriots were going to make that run. So, with my, Miles watching that, I'll never forget that one that he just thought, wow, this being an Eagles fan is easy. This is so easy. They just win. They just beat up on the big guy win the Super Bowl. It's like it really was the first one that I remember him really getting into. You know, sitting there watching it, really understanding it. So it's been a fun. It's been a fun experience with him. I mean, I think that's anybody who's, you know, you have a child that, you know, you kind of just share these things. And we're anxious to hopefully get another one on Sunday.
Well, and it's funny. It's funny that you put it that way because even you, you're 10 years younger than me. And so when you were getting to be about 10 years old, you know, the 1980 rolled around. And so you had Dick Vermeil era Eagles to appreciate. I mean, I literally grew up with the dregs. I mean, when I tell you four and 10 and three, 9-1. I mean, if they tied, a tie was a big deal. I mean, you know, Harvard beats Yale 29-29. It's years and years of misery. I mean, and it's hard. I think people have listened to me all these years about them. They understand. And I think I've explained it well enough. But, to have them be competitive like this on a regular basis now is just almost strange. It's a weird feeling. I'm placid, Sean. I win or lose Sunday, just to have them in the playing the last game of the year just feels nice.
Oh, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. And I like their team. I mean, I like the moxie of them. I like the way they play. And I mean, the Eagles for so many years, even Dick Vermeil, I mean, we used to say run, pass, punt. And that was Dick Vermeil's offensive, approach. And it was just like, God, it'd drive you crazy, right? He'd hand it off to Wilbur Montgomery, get 3 yards, hand it off to Leroy Harris, get 2 yards, and then try to hit Howard Carmichael on an end route and then, go over his head or be, Ron Jaworski would throw it in the ground, and then, Max Runiger or one of those punters would punt it. It was like, that's what you watch, right? So that's what I mean. Like when they beat the Patriots, it was just so unlike any Eagles team that we've been, we've just been just frustrated by all those years. So that part's great. I just love the way they play. I like the competitive, the aggressive nature of how they play. That part's really fun to watch.
Well,
compared to all those other years when you were just watching them, they would just implode in front of your eyes. They got a little better. I mean, Buddy Ryan, he had some spark, and Randall Cunningham, guys like that. I mean, they were at least they had some good years there. But it's fun. It's fun to see, be rooting for a team that. That's competitive and fun to watch, and that part's great.
Well, enjoy Sunday, and hopefully next conversation we're celebrating and happy Birds fans. Sean, great to catch up, heal up, and the new barn is underway.
We're actually, this is a makeshift barn. We turned a shed into a barn. We've added some stalls there and kind of made that our makeshift barn. But the actual barn, no, it's still just, we've cleaned it up. But it's still just a sad kind of gaping hole in the middle of our farm. You drive in the driveway every day and just see where it used to be. So it's a little, still kind of raw and sad, but we're going to rebuild, so we'll be back, and hopefully hopefully it'll be as endearing as it once was.
Exactly, and there'll be memorabilia and all kind of, you know, decorated with countless. There's no shortage, right, of Clancy photos and tack and. You name it, to adorn the office.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll try to recreate the space and make it the centerpiece of the farm again, hopefully.
There you go. Sean Clancy, everybody. Buy Sean Clancy. I'll put up the link to thisishorseracing.com. And, Sean, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Sean Clancy, folks. And second of our third conversation this hour. We'll... Here is Pat Kelly. I'm out here listening, and I've only given up the horse stuff part of the business. They still will have he'll take care of the NYFA and the pension fund work and the aftercare work, and plenty of other things on to go around. We'll get Pat on to reflect the first opportunity that we get. So that was kind. And I'll send the link up to this piece that was a column. But, you know, Sean's got that cup of coffee that he does every day where he's got to write literally whatever, 26, how many issues of the Saratoga Special, 26, 28 issues, give or take. And as he has said, and actually as Joe has written as well about, you know, the challenge of writing a column, like, you know, on a almost daily basis, it's a lot. For anybody that's ever, you know, worked in that arena, this is one of Sean's cups of coffee, and it goes back to 2016. I saw 2016 was the summer that he wrote that, but then he wrote kind of an overwrap introduction or coda to the column as well about Pat, who is just respected and beloved. We're going to get. Before the top of the hour break, let's go to Vic here, and then we'll have Dave Hill and Rich Eng. One more break after Vic joins us, and then Dave Hill will provide his final thoughts on the final football game of the year. And I'm anxious to see which of the props that he is focusing in on. Right now, we're going to focus in on both Thorograph and Oaklawn Park with Vic Stauffer. Vic.
Good morning, Mr. Vic, and how are you?
Excellent. Coming to you from Tampa Bay Downs.
You're from where? You're at Tampa Bay. So you're listening to the dulcet tones of the one and only Jay Balls Calls, also known as Jason Beam.
We had Jason at the end of the show yesterday, and I'm actually going to have dinner later tonight. We had it's just always fun. I find myself there's no shortage of conversations that veer away from racing, but with Jason's one of those people that you very easily can go careening into any topic.
Oh, you ain't lying, and he's very well versed in all of those topics.
Yes.
Of all of the characters that I've met over my 45 years in this great business, I got to tell you, Jason is one of my all-time favorites. And some of the personal things that he's overcome, and he talks about them. It's not like I'm talking out of school about it. And a self-made man, a talented guy that if he went mainstream, he would make stacks compared to what we can try to make in this industry, but we stay in this industry because we love it so much. And I am just a card-carrying member of the Jason Bean fan club. I may very well be the president.
There you go. That's nice. Dive in and get a couple of overlays. The Oakland action continues. We got the Dixie Bell coming up. And we're starting to edge closer to the big weekends. I'm coming in 2 weeks, Vic. We'll see you. We'll do a live segment, certainly, Rebel Week, just 3 weekends, 3 Saturdays away. Quick overview, and then we'll talk some Thorograph. And I'm guessing we're going to utilize some Oaklawn tomorrow?
Yeah, I got a couple from Oaklawn tomorrow.
Okay.
Or I think we can make a few bucks. But, yeah, the Dixie Bell is... It is really cool, and it is starting to heat up. We got a feel of that with Southwest Weekend when Arabian Night came in and won by 568 lengths, and Alaska has never let him run a step. And that was a really fun day. Not only did we watch Arabian Night do his thing, but tonight was just breathtaking.
Yeah.
In that race, the King Cotton. And I guess Steve is talking about taking him to Saudi Arabia for his next start to run in the sprint race over there. And boy, I can't imagine if he doesn't replicate that race that he ran here at Oakland the other day. I mean, he beat a field that some would say wasn't all that tough, but I would say Flash of Mischief I thought was a very, very serious horse. And so Tejano Twist, and he just, I mean, Santana never let him run a step, and he won by 4.5 in the fastest time of the season. So I was taken. Both those efforts took my breath away. Arabian Night obviously is, some say, well, you know, a Southwest horse hasn't really ever gone on and won the Kentucky Derby and all that. And okay. That's fine. But he, to me, seems just like Justify. You know, I know he started once as a 2-year-old. He ran on Breeders' Cup Saturday, but man, oh man, is he talented. $2.3 million, and who knows who's going to train him also, but who knows where that's going to go. Very special.
Well, we are looking forward to getting to Oaklawn for the Rebel. Typically come in for that, and looking forward to it. Let's shift and look ahead to this next weekend. Cards are in place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I'm anxious to see where you're going. I've got 5 of tomorrow's 9 races laid out or printed, and so I'll just react to you and follow along as we try to help people that are either Thorograph users that are still feeling their way, learning the product, or those that are just curious, those that even are experienced. There's so much data, Vic, that Jerry packs into the pages. And it is funny because I talk to users regularly and I get questions, particularly Christmas to New Year's week when the data is free and people can download it. And you know, I always tell them, feel free to, you know, to ask. It's amazing how many little nuances are on the sheets that some people don't even really utilize. And I'm hoping that in these conversations, we get people to look beyond just the performance figure and utilize the indices, utilize the trainer stats, the sire stats, the thorough patterns. I mean, there's so much that is in there. And it's why even whatever price it is for an individual card or build a card, it's a value because you get an advantage, and advantages are so increasingly few for us horse players.
I mean, you couldn't have said it any better, Steve. I would actually look at Thorograph if there was no numbers on them, because of all the other things that you can get. Now, clearly the numbers are the product, and they can tell us things that other people can't possibly know, and they can tell us with a degree of certainty that will cause us to bet our money. But all of the other things, and a perfect example of that is the first race that I'm going to look at, and I can talk about several horses in the race. And the first one that I would talk about is the horse that I'm going to end up picking in the race, and it's number 1, Royal King. If you look on the Thorograph lines, way up at the top,
fourth
not
race.
The number.
Fourth race.
Fourth race, number 1, Royal King. And if you look over at the line where it shows what date he ran and who he ran against and where he finished and all of that stuff, stuff you can get in the form as well. All the way over to the right, just below his name, you're going to see what says 4W. Now, what that means is that that day, Royal King, around the far turn, was in the four path. He was four wide. So when you go down and you see the horse that's the 8-5 favorite in the race, which is Plausible Denial, he comes out of the very same race, and that on his line says 2W, or two wide. And everybody knows the mathematics of ground saved means everything. So Plausible Denial in that race finished well in front of Royal King. Royal King was beaten in that race three lengths, and Plausible Denial was beaten a length and a quarter. But Royal King earned a better figure. He ran a 7.5, where Plausible Denial ran an 8. So just on that very beginning basis, you begin to understand really what goes into all of the things that Jerry incorporates into making these incredible numbers. So Royal King is 7-2 on the line for Mac Robertson. Steve, are you a fan of Broadway? Do you like musicals?
I do. My brother is probably the top press agent on Broadway.
There you go. So you know all of the great musicals. Well,
yes.
One of the ones that arguably has made the more money than any other is Wicked. And the main character in Wicked are the two witches, and one is named Glinda, and the other one is named Elphaba. And during that show, they talk about how Elphaba has these incredible powers because she's a child of both worlds. She came from the child of all the wizardry and all of that, but then she also had just a regular old human father who turned out to be the Wizard of Oz. Well, me as a handicapper, I like to think of myself as a child of both worlds. Not only just Thoroughgraph, but movies and trainer intent and all of that. And that's why I think in this race, Royal King is a terrific play. Mac Robertson did nothing for the first 6 or 7 weeks of this meet. And then last week, every horse he ran off the screen. So he is starting to heat up. That's one factor. Another thing is the change to Christian Torres from Eduardo Gallardo. Now, if you go back, and no knock on Mr. Gallardo, but he's only won one race at the beat. It happened to be for Mac Robertson. But if you go back and look at the movie of this race, you'll see something that I thought was extremely interesting. Not only is he in the four path after really breaking well, he was off of a pretty long layoff, almost a year on the shelf. So when they turn for home, you're going to see that Gallardo is going to drop his reins. When a jockey drops their reins, it's like trying to drive on the freeway with your knees. You have no control of the horse. And so he struggles to get them back. And then for a flash right after the race, you'll see on the gallop out, he's headed towards the outside fence. So I think not only did he drop his reins, but he may have had some equipment problems as well. So if you factor all of that in, now Royal King at 7-2 drawn on the rail becomes very interesting. Will the racetrack be off? Well, here's the thing. It's rained about 714 inches in the last 24 hours here in Hot Springs. But I'm going to tell you something about Oakland. By post time tomorrow, the racetrack will be fine. It'll have a little moisture in it, but it will be fine. And so we don't have to worry about whether or not this horse has to slop through a bunch of mud and muck. Now, let's talk about a couple other horses in this race, because I think it becomes interesting. And people say, well, why are you taking a big position on a horse when there's four first-time starters in the race? How do you know about them? Well, I think I know a little bit because Steve Asmussen has two of them. Now, he has started to migrate back towards Ricardo Santana, and I think for good reason, because he's the best rider on the grounds and it's not even close. But he's got two in here, and Santana does not ride either one of them. Isaac Castillo is on one, and Into Mischief called Tulson, and his son, Keith Asmussen, rides another one. That's Gold Baron, who's by Medaglia d'Oro. Santana ends up on a Johnny Ortiz horse in this race, and his name is global stage. He's my street sense. Seems to be training well, but the fact that Santana rides this over the two Asmussen first-time starters, I think is very interesting. Now let's talk another thing about what Thoreau can do to you. Go down to the last horse and see a horse called Bolsey. He's by Gunrunner, and he's trained by Donnie K. von Hemel, who won his first race at the Beat last weekend. But if you go all the way to the right of the sheet, you're going to see breeding, and you're going to see that, yes, he's by Gunrunner, but the mare is named She's All In. And another thing that you can see on Thoreau is that She's All In won 16 races in her career, and 8 of them were stakes. Now, did she pass that on to her progeny? She sure did, because the first foal out of She's All In is She's All Wolf, who won 6 stakes. That's all on the Thoreau page.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the numbers. It's all there. So I think the way to play this race is to make a win bet on Royal King, the inside horse for Mac Robertson, who will be 7-2, maybe even more. I'm going to pitch the two Asmussens, and I'm going to use the horse for Ortiz that Santana rides, and then I'm going to go out and use the Donnie K horse that Francisco Arrieta rides called Bolsey. And what I'm also going to do is I'm going to pitch Plausible Denial. He's the 8-5 favorite. Now, why would I do that? Plausible Denial's first start as a 4-year-old, he ran an 8. His first start as a 3-year-old a year ago, he ran an 8. There has been no development, and therein lies another thing that you can see on Thoreau. Will he go through the 8? Jimmy DeVito's a pretty good trainer, but I don't see any reason to believe that he will. Just by natural grow-up, this horse should have come back as his first start as a 4-year-old and run 2 or 3 points faster than he did a year before. But he hasn't developed at all. He's running the same figure that he did a year ago. That makes him an extremely vulnerable 8-5 favorite, and it makes the fourth race of Oakland tomorrow an extremely interesting race to bet, and I'm going to bet it.
Well, and Plausible Denial, a horse we happen to be pretty familiar with, because it just so happens that Rick Hammerly and I had dinner with Jimmy DeVito days before Plausible Denial debuted, and this horse has been a source of incredible frustration for Jimmy, because the talent was there, and he just seems like he's well on his way to being a career maiden. I mean, he's banked $90,000, and he was bought to be a good horse at OBS March as a 2-year-old for $375,000. But he's just one of those horses that if this was a pick six and this was the anchor leg, this is a horse you don't use. I mean, you because you expect that this is a horse that just is not, isn't going to pass horses late, just doesn't want to win. Refusnik, as we can.
Yeah, there's a couple of words that you just don't say around the racetrack. One of them starts with a B, and that's called bias. I don't believe in track bias. As many people do, I don't. The other one starts with an H, which is hang. That horse is a hanger. You said it a good way, a refusnik. Horse, he just doesn't, I mean.
Well, they're herd animals, and there's the mentality of the leader of the herd. I mean, that when we see these savagings, it's because the leader, the horse that's doing the savaging, is saying to the horse that's coming up and competing with him, I'm supposed to be in front, you're not. And that's why savagings occur. And then there's horses, famous horses, that perfect drift, that just, they'll come up to a leader and they internally know, I'm not supposed to be in front. So you got to time them, like a 3-bank snooker shot, and have them hit the wire so they don't even know that they're winning. So there are horses. There's not a lot you can do. You can put blinkers and cheaters, and you try all different things. And Jimmy did put the blinkers on 2 back, but boy, it is tough. He's tried a lot of things up to a mile, and then trying to turn back, and it just hasn't come together. I will talk about one Asmussen. And again, people have heard me talk, Vic, endlessly about how much of a resource the sibling and the dam information is on the full sheets. And we should actually include that in this sort of first conversation. There are 3 sort of levels or 3 different interpretations of Thoreau that you can use. There's the full sheet, which is a basically an 8.5 by 11 page that has all the information in one place, progeny and siblings on the right column, virtually all of the last three seasons of a horse's career, the stallion stats, the trainer stats, the trainer with jock, the last first time and second time starters that a trainer has sent out. Then from there, you can go to Thorough Quick, which is a more abbreviated version of the sheet. And that's a little less information, but still quite a bit. And then there's the Mini Quick, which is simply the number. If you don't want the extraneous other statistics and indices, well, then the Quick, in fact, Nick Tamaro and I were talking recently, and Nick said that he's gotten into he's a Thoroughgraph user, and he's gotten into a preference. He said he accidentally got a Mini Quick one time, and he looked at it, and the more he looked at it, then he started picking that instead when he got the figs, and he now prefers the Mini Thorough Quick. So three different layers of information available. But when it comes to the siblings, that second Asmussen catches my eye a little bit. Gold Baron is a little less intriguing, although the dam 50 Shades of Gold, she was a stake winner, and you know, was a nice horse. The other one, though, Tulson, is a half to, or a full to Maximus Mischief. Butchie Reed's very, very nice and precocious horse. And this is Levinson and Mulholland Springs. This is probably a nice horse. And the jock situation doesn't bother me. Castillo wins with Asmussen. So I would give Tulson some look too, or some inclusion underneath.
I can't tell you you're wrong with that. The jock situation, to me, being a former jock's agent, is a little bit bigger of a deal. There's no getting around. And Steve is a good friend of yours and mine, but there's no getting around. He's having a terrible meet. He's at less than 10%. I think, and maybe I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but maybe the elephant in the room is that he's put Keith on so many horses. He's put him on 40 horses. Keith's a nice young man, but he's not as good as these guys. I mean, I don't want to get in trouble, and I probably just did, but he's just not yet as good as these guys. And frankly, I think he's cost his dad three or four wins. He's going to get better. This is the way to learn, especially when you're running against the best. But you're kind of taking a little bit of the worst of it right now with Keith. The only way to learn is to ride, and he's got a. Steve was leading rider at the Meadowlands when he was a buck, and we all have to. You know, there's really only one way to learn, and that is from experience. But I think it is. It has contributed a little bit to the numbers for Steve, not excelling as he has in the past. We know that that's going to be a statistical anomaly, and he's going to end up right there on top of the standings, or second behind Deodoro. But I guess Tolson's one thing I've noticed about Steve, and I send him texts all the time telling him what a fan of Santana I am. I think that for jockeys, frankly, I don't care who rides horses unless they're a difference maker. And of all the guys that ride at Oaklawn, and we've got some really, really good riders. Christian Torres is terrific. Martin Garcia, Joe Talama, Bay Hirano has been on fire. Francisco Arrieta, David Cabrera, they're all really good riders. They're not difference makers. Santana is a difference maker. He wins with horses that other guys would not have won on. And you can talk about the difference makers that I've seen in my life, and you can talk about them with the fingers on two hands. Garrett Gomez, Jerry Bailey, Julie Crone, Lafitte Pinkai, Shoemaker. I mean, the elites. I think Santana is in that group. I read Ortiz, obviously, too, now. Ramon Dominguez. I think Santana is that good. So it factored in a little bit for me because Steve has been using him a lot more recently.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it ain't jockey racing. It is horse racing. I get that.
Let's come up with a second horse, and what are you looking at?
I'm going to go down to the eighth race. And I'm going to tell you that it is a terrific race, partially because, once again, we have the third try off the layoff of Barber Road. And I don't know what's going on with Barber Road, but I do know he is not the horse that he was last year. As a matter of fact, he's not even close to as good as he was last year. At this time last year, when he was on the Arkansas and Kentucky Derby trail, he was running thoroughbred figures that put him just a little bit behind the elite, like Epicenter, but enough to consider him, and many people liked him, in both the Arkansas and the Kentucky Derby. And he was running numbers down as low as 4.5. In the Kentucky Derby, he ran a top. Shocker for Steve. He ran a 3.25. This year, not for Steve, for Johnny Ortiz. This year, Ortiz brought him back. He ran a 7.25. Okay, let's say he needed the race. All right, we'll go ahead and say that. Visually, he looked terrible. Not in the flesh or soundness-wise. He just raced terrible. But okay, let's give him a race. So we brought him back, and he couldn't even get back to that 7.25. He ran a 7.5. Now, the racetrack was sloppy, and maybe that's an excuse, but if you start making excuses for horses like this, you're going to end up with no chips very, very quickly. And he's going to be favored again tomorrow. Now he loses Santana, and he goes to David Cabrera, and just the mere presence of Barber Road in this race makes it, to me, an excellent betting race. What do you think?
I don't disagree at all. I mean, John Ortiz has been in a funk pretty much everywhere, and this was never a fast horse, to be honest. I don't know how much there is to give. I certainly don't want him as a favorite. I you know, Tonka Warrior and Amongst Friends and Chileno, Chileno, I prefer all three of them ahead of him.
Yeah, and I throw B-Sud in there as well. I made a huge bet on B-Sud the other day, and this horse, obviously Dallas Stewart said, we're sending him along for the first time. Let's take a hold of him and try to make one run. And that's fine. You know, Dallas knows more about his horses than me. But I think that the great jockeys sometimes have to call an audible if something happens in the race. And in that particular race, I bet him because I thought he was going to make the leap by himself on a racetrack that shockingly, after I said I don't believe in track biases, there was one day this year at Oakland, January 7th, where you could not close. You couldn't close. And every winner was either first or second at every point in the call. And that was January 7th. And I saw that going on. And so I was sure out of sprint races that B-Sud was going to make an uncontested lead. And he could have, because go back and watch this movie. They've run three steps. He's three in front. And Arietta takes hold of him. And I even talk about it in the call because it was so clear that the way he broke, that it was shocking to see him take hold. But then I realized that Dallas Stewart said, listen, take hold of this horse. Let's try to make one run. I think that when that happens, though, the truly elite riders say, okay, boss, I know that you told me to take hold, but we broke three in front. I just had to go. And they'll understand. All that being said, the horse that made the lead was a Moquette with Bejarano on the rail, and he never looked back, called Speed Bias, interestingly enough. Yeah. B-Sud ran a great second. So he's a player in there as well. You said when you were going through the horses, though, that you liked, one of them was the one that I'm going to bet on, and it's the bottom horse, Amongst Friends. Yeah. I think he is extremely interesting in this spot. And there's a number of reasons, and a lot of them have to do with Thoroughgraph as well. Amongst Friends, when he was a three-year-old, and this is something that is very hard to see unless you have something like Thoroughgraph. He started his career, he ran one race sprinting at Oakland, and then he went to Horseshoe Indianapolis. They tried him once sprinting, they tried him on the turf, that was a disaster. And then what did they do? They sent him long for the first time. When a horse runs a top, the first time he gets sent long by a trainer, he is a router. He is a horse that wants to go long. And so that tells me that I'm going to always keep an extra special eye out for him when he routes. Okay, so now let's go to this year and all the races he ran last year. At the end of last year, he ran here at Oaklawn before we turned the year. He ran a 7 3/4 in the slop. So then Aaron Shorter, who, by the way, I am a big fan of, hadn't won a race at the meet, but he is an extremely good horseman. He's one of those Jimmy DeVito types that can get a horse, a Tom Swearingen type, who can get a horse across at a big price on with the right situation. He decides to send him long, and this horse runs another top going long. And it wasn't a surprise because it was going long. He ran a 5.5. And another thing about Thoroughgraph is when you see the sheet, sometimes you're going to see letters next to the number. And in this case, it's 5.5 TU. TU stands for took up. Now, that means, in the opinion of the person that was looking at the race and doing the ground, and what ground is placing them in their paths around the turns, they felt that that horse got into a little bit of trouble. Now, Jerry will never factor that into the number because he believes that we should quantify that trouble for ourselves. He shouldn't. He does not put it into the number, but he lets you know by putting that TU there that that trouble exists. Now go back in the movie and see for yourself what you think, how it affected him. So that's what I did. And not only did he take up, but he got slammed around and shuffled back very badly at the start. And that part of it isn't in the trouble line. And then all the way around the far turn, it's very subtle. It's not like he has to slam on the brakes, but it's like he has forward momentum, but he can't use it because he just can't find a way through. And that happens all the way from the 3/8 pole to about the 8th pole, literally a quarter of a mile. He finally finds a seam and comes flat flying and just gets beat in the last jump. Tomorrow he's drawn way outside of you, so I don't want him that far out going a mile and a 16th. Doesn't bother me at all. If he loses a little ground, fine, because he's not going to have as strong as pass. He gets that extra 16th of a mile. It is hard to win from off the pace going our short stretch mile when they come to the wire at the 16th pole instead of the regular wire. And he will be every bit of the price that he is on the morning line. I like him a lot, and I'm going to bet on him. Amongst friends, which is how I feel when I'm on your show, Steve.
Very kind. Vic, this is fun. Great start to this Thoroughgraph conversations folded into Oaklawn as the big part of the meet is just ahead of us. I appreciate it. Good luck tomorrow, and we'll talk next week.
I'm looking forward to it, Steve, and I'm really looking forward to you being here for Rebel. It's going to be great.
Vic Stauffer, everybody. Goof on the Roof. As you know, let's take a break very quickly. Come right back. Dave Hill standing by, and we will sit down with Dave. I mean, I'm sitting here. He'll be sitting there. And we will go through his final thoughts on the Super Bowl. He's had a great year. Been invaluable to our audience. And see if we can't finish strong. I mean, the game part is fine. However, direction he's going, I think he's leaning birds, but it's the props, and we kind of prefaced that last week. Dave Hill's next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America, but we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the